Welcome to the May 11th, 2021 Platinum Call. Really great to see you all tonight. If you haven't met me, I'm Gail Watkins and am thrilled to have you join us tonight. If you have not joined us before, the way these calls go, let me get rid of that, is it's sort of first come, first serve. Ask your questions. I had a few mailed in, which I will respond to. But don't be shy. Don't wait until the end. I really do have to wrap right around 9:30 tonight. Obviously, you can leave earlier, but I need to cut off at 90 minutes, and I don't want to leave you hanging if you still have a question. But first, let me do my announcements, because we seem to have a lot of things going on. So Monday, May 17th, 1 o'clock is our webinar. It's the next in our series of APET webinars, Avidog Puppy Evaluation Tests, Temperament Testing. And this time we are gonna focus on the focus traits. So we're gonna look at where do puppies put their attention and their energy. And there are five focus traits that we're gonna consider. And they are people, often known as sociability, environment, which we talked about last time, and so we're only going to use it as a contrast to the other types of focus, object, things in the environment, activity, doing things, and scenting. And then we're going to talk about what they look like, what do they look like in adult dogs, and how do we think about them as we match puppies to homes? Who is going to love that trait and who isn't going to love that trait in their puppies? Okay, so that's Monday, 1 o'clock. You'll get a reminder on Sunday if you haven't signed up yet. Then tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern time, I'm putting it in the chat. Cocapelli, if you haven't followed Bruce Christensen's ongoing breeder webinar series, for those of you who are out west and are around Bruce, I'm really impressed with his webinars. So yeah, you're lucky, Colleen. Some are unbelievably fabulous. Some are average. I haven't heard any that are bad. So tomorrow he has Dr. Stuart Mason in. I'll put his name in. And it is tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern. Sorry, I'm wrong. I'm tired tonight. Sorry. 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time. Dr. Mason, I have never heard him speak before, but I'm pretty excited about it. One, he's Australian, so he's going to have a great accent. But two, he is the guy that really started talking about oral calcium during whelping. And he is the guy that talked about, he's the first one starting intranasal progesterone post-whelping. And so this guy seems to be very cutting edge. And tomorrow he's talking about TCIs and surgicals and the research that he's done on those. So it's $25. There's the link. Worth $25, in my opinion. In addition, tomorrow night, so you just are going to have a rich educational day tomorrow, because on the Good Dog Facebook Live, Good Dog Facebook group, if you are a good dog breeder, I am going to be presenting on play areas and puppies. Now, some of you guys have heard this before, but I'm going to be working with Laura Reeves, who is a Spinoni and a wire hair pointer breeder. She does Pure Dog Talk, if you've ever listened to Pure Dog Talk, her podcast, professional handler, AKC judge. And we're going to be not just talking about play areas, but a little show and tell as well. And if you're a good breeder, they're giving away adventure box to a lucky winner, but you have to be on to win. So 5 o'clock, Facebook Live. Renee, you can't see that earlier chat. I'll put it in again. This is Dr. Stuart Mason tomorrow night. So it's just going to be an educational kind of day tomorrow. Facebook Live is free, and you might get an adventure box out of it, one of Marcy and Lisa's. So really nice adventure box. Then the other thing is that I was listening just earlier today to a recent Coccapelli webinar with Dr. Joe Wachschlag, who is a vet nutritionist from Cornell. He is a really interesting guy. I don't agree with everything he says. He doesn't agree with everything I say, but he really does tell it like it is. So this talk was on homemade, it was supposed to be on homemade and raw diets. I'm putting it in the chat. Let me type it in. On homemade and raw diets, you have to call to purchase access. It's again, $25. Here is the phone number. So the reason that I found it so interesting, it actually was primarily on homemade diets. It wasn't really on commercial raw diets, but Dr. Wachschlag was very, very straightforward about supplements, about how to look at a dog food. So he went through some labels and he showed identical protein and fat percentages and showed why some diets were good and some diets were bad. So it was, that was very interesting. And then he got on DCM and grain-free. And if you have any interest in the grain-free issue with dilated cardiomyopathy and any suspicion that all of the to-do is perhaps not what it seems to be, then you want to listen to this, because this is a vet nutritionist basically saying that the problem isn't grain-free. He does recommend Purina Pro Plan 30/20. You know, he's fine with that, but he basically was saying that it's not much ado about nothing, but it is researchers doing bad research, which I've been saying now for 3 years, and making completely inappropriate claims. And he doesn't have the full answer, but he is pretty darn sure it isn't because it's grain-free. So he talks about flaxseed and phytoestrogens. So little tidbit on that. We've talked about that in the group before. In fact, we just had a conversation about foods with flaxseeds the other day. The one thing that I didn't know about the problem with phytoestrogens is that it might affect the fertility of a bitch. It doesn't affect her when she's pregnant or lactating, but it might affect her fertility. But it also might affect her offspring's fertility, which I didn't know about that. Now, he doesn't feel that it is small amounts of flax, and the vast majority of foods that say flaxseed on the labels have a pinch of flaxseed in them because it's an expensive ingredient. But I thought it was a really interesting conversation. What else did he talk about? If you're a golden breeder, he talks a little bit about goldens and the issue with DCM. He fed raw. He's a sprint musher and bred mushing dogs for years. So he's a pretty casual breeder, I have to say, you know, like they're chained out next to their barrels having their babies. And, you know, he's a typical musher breeder, not quite like us. But it was a really interesting conversation, and I normally would not be pushing this, but I really thought if you feed raw, feed homemade, he made me question some things I'm doing. I'm going to ponder them a little. If you just want to think through labels better and ingredients better, it really is worth $25, in my opinion.
So Gail, which things did he cause you to ponder?
He caused me to ponder cooked versus raw. Because he showed the main reason that we want to feed raw is for digestibility and sort of purity of the food, because he acknowledged that he's had two sessions recently, and he acknowledged last time there's really little need for carbohydrates in most dogs. Some need fiber, some need more fiber than others, but many of them don't. But he spent some time going through the possible, mostly salmonella, but in addition, other pathogens. And he showed that the digestibility difference between raw and cooked is insignificant in the statistical way. Like there's no significant difference in digestibility. And so if that's what we're seeking is this digestibility, and he basically, he goes through raw myths, you know, like you can't feed kibble in raw, which I've refuted as well. It's just total hogwash. And he goes through and he refutes many of the myths about raw feeding, most of which I agreed with and we've already talked about. But the pathogen issue has come up recently, I think, in three of the papers I've been reading, and it just made me think more about it, Tracy. And so what's the gain of feeding raw other than a little bit more time, you know, a little less time commitment than cooking it? So anyway, I haven't decided yet. I fed raw tonight. So no rapid, but I'm pondering it.
So I attended both of his lectures, and yeah. I found them very interesting. I thought he spent a good amount of time educating you on how to read labels and understand what it meant when it said byproduct, and, you know, showing you the butcher case in France, et cetera.
I know. That was pretty yummy, wasn't it?
It made me want to throw up. So, but the things that he that caused me to question was his, if it's listed, if folic acid is listed as one of the ingredients that we don't need to add extra for our bitches,
that was in his first talk, right? That was not in this one.
Yeah, yeah, I thought they.
I didn't love the first one.
No.
I didn't. I thought he was super casual. He didn't back it with research the way he did this time. He made that casual comment about folic acid with no real substantiation. So he did say that. I agree. I just wasn't quite as convinced.
And I was the same thing about the flaxseed and the second generation, the impact on the second generation. I thought that was interesting. I did see Dr. Christensen today. I have two girls that are due 24 hours apart.
Lucky you.
Yeah, no kidding. My older one, as they were taking them in, since this is the subject, she asked, what are they eating? They've been eating. I had gone to Royal Canin at the suggestion of one of the stud owners, said that the new professional HD, HT, 42D, whatever, and that she says, quote, I haven't had a stillbirth since I started the program. I thought, well, there you go. Anyway, decided to try it. Girls won't touch it. Won't touch it. They started, but they won't. And they wouldn't even come back to the 3020, the ProPlan 3020. And I'm thinking, we've got to eat. So I pulled out raw. I mentioned this to his associate assistant today. And she gave me the look that we all know.
And, oh yeah.
Basically said, you definitely don't want to be doing that while she's whelping because of the risk of salmonella to the pups. Well, Dr. Waxleg says salmonella is in kibble, right?
It is. The only recorded deaths of owners from salmonella are from kibble and pigs ears.
Gosh. I had that information in my head.
I'm sorry.
When they're looking
I'm
at me, Gail.
I know. Pull that one out next time.
And my second, I have another question that sort of is related. I'm pushing the envelope with my red girl on this. She's 7. She's in good condition, but not a Mary Livingston quality. I started out a little.
She's not ripped yet.
She's not, but she's been good. And I wanted one more for selfish reasons. And he saw a resorption in her today. And of the 7 to 8 placentas, one of the heartbeats isn't real strong. So he put her on clavamoxin, something like that, antibiotic, wants to ultrasound her again next week. And, you know, just caution, he said, precaution. Would you elect to just go after a C-section, not even to try letting her deliver the pups?
What kind of support do you have for emergency care?
We're in Reading.
Well, I'm in Highlands, so.
Yeah, I know the distance. Well, the place that I go, have been going to, that's 10 minutes from my house, had four doctors and they're all gone. Mary's location, all their doctors are looking for new ones. We're just, I've got an appointment with, I talked to the doctor who attended Sydney on her last litter, and she recommended that I go out 10 miles. Big deal. No biggie. Dr. C's 3 hours. So, but man, is he worth the drive?
Yeah. I obviously don't know the guy, but I've gotten to know him through the seminars and he's kind of blunt, but nicely blunt. And
yeah. Know. Yeah. He really addresses things caringly. I felt, you know, he told me that anyway, would you do an elective C-section, with her?
So I might schedule one for day 64 if she hasn't whelped.
Okay.
And that way you aren't going to go too long. I'm just not a fan of elective C-sections. I just had two more bitches run into really serious problems from elective C-sections. I still think we are taking them too casually and no one is capturing the data on.
Oh, Celeste, I see your nodding head.
It's true. There's, you know, all these vets are saying, oh, do C-sections, you'll save your puppies. You will save your puppies. You will more likely have more living puppies. But there is a significantly greater risk to your bitch.
He presented that. What do you recommend then that I super duper focus on for the next 4 weeks for her so that she's successful? Her last delivery, the first pup got stuck. That's how I know the doctor to ask. And so I transported because I was following all the whelping rules. I'd done all of the maneuvers and she was within that timeline. So I got over there and we got puppy number one out and within the hour had five more. And then there was a little bit of a delay and doctor wanted to do an ultrasound. And she came back and said, the others, their hearts are in jeopardy. I recommend a C-section. So this is a VBAC. This would be.
That's fine. That's not an issue. So they can, well, naturally after C-sections, it's not a big deal for bitches.
Yeah, we tend to equate this to women and it's not.
It's very different. So what are the risks, Tracy? She's 7 years old. There's a higher risk to dystocia in seven-year-old bitches, period. You know, we just know that. But we've had litters of 9 out of 7-year-olds before naturally whelped. Right. So it's a greater risk, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen. It just means that the risk is higher.
Okay.
So follow those whelping rules, keep her fit, do your best. So you have a decent number of puppies. So moderate your feeding based on that. Not too much, not too little.
Would you do the 150 for her? 150% of her?
What was she? 7 to 8?
7 to 8
puppies.
Yeah.
I would actually go to 200 to 225.
You would? Okay.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's a good size litter. She's going to be carrying 20 pounds of puppies, 16 pounds of puppies. So, you know, she's got to create them out of something. And it's either her body or it's the nutrition you give her and she's got to create them and the placentas.
Okay.
So you don't want them small because then you've got a huge risk as well. You just don't want them too big. Then follow your whelping rules. And if you're thinking, you know, and listen to your intuition, like this isn't feeling right. It's not starting on time. Mm-hmm. Then head in, you know, whelp in the parking lot if you're worried about it. But
well, he's not 3 hours away. I've got an appointment with this 10 miles away to find out, you know, can they do the surgery if I'm in an emergency situation?
Right? Well, that's pivotal. If you don't have emergency care, so that's the position I am now in, is I simply don't have emergency care. So me, I'm moving to Atlanta for my next litter. And I'm literally going to be 10 minutes away from my vet in a VRBO whelping my litter. Because I just will not stay up here again to go through another litter. So that's how I'm handling it. It may not make sense for you, but I'm going to be close enough. Yeah. If you can get close enough to emergency care, pack your stuff up. We all have our go bags. And that's my plan. But if the 10 minute away is a good option, then go with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Cool. I'm going to move on. Stephanie says, good dogs, good breeder group is only open to good breeder members. I know. We're really trying. I'll try and get you the video, Stephanie. I promise you, I'm beating my head against the wall about Canadian breeders right now. And I don't know if I'm as frustrated as you are, but I'm pretty frustrated by it. I also do know that Good Dog has went into the year with a 3,000 breeder backlog to talk to and go through. And so that's one of the reasons that they don't want to bring on Canadians, because they just aren't going to get to anybody. I mean, they've got an office of 10 people going through 3,000 breeders. So, hey, Celeste.
I just brought Star home from the vet for getting her spay. And I was really worried. It turns out nothing's wrong with her. But she, after her last litter, normally when the puppies are starting to be weaned or when they're before they're weaned, she really gets thin. But not, to be honest with you, she has a tendency to be a little overweight. So when she got thin, it was like, oh, yay, that's the good weight. So I didn't end up feeding her anymore or anything, but for some reason she just gained weight and I didn't change anything. The vet seems to think it's the labs. I don't quite understand this because it's some scientific thing, but some thingy, right, Tracy? she processes her food extremely well or something. But anyway, my question is I remember in the back of my head somewhere, you were feeding pumpkin to a dog that was spayed.
Yep.
What do I do? I mean, how do I do that?
You have to assume that her caloric intake needs to go down to by about 50%.
Okay, so
by half.
She's only having two cups a day of Purina Pro Plan. Does that mean
now?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's gonna she's gonna go to one cup, but you're gonna give her a cup of pumpkin. You can give her a cup and a half of pumpkin to compensate over the day. So that would be 3/4 and 3/4.
Okay.
So Glee went from 14 ounces of raw food a day to 7 ounces, 3.5 and 3.5 morning and evening. Do you know how little that's not a quarter of a cup of food.
And they survive.
Well, with a supplement, and then this is where supplementation, I will completely disagree with Dr. Christensen and Dr. Wachslug on this, because there is research showing that when we feed less than what the recommended dose on the bag is, or the recommended amount on the bag is, then we are cutting back on key nutrients, because the dog food companies put in enough vitamin A that if your dog's supposed to get 2 cups and you feed it 2 cups, it will get enough vitamin A. But if your dog only gets 1 cup because it's a Labrador or it's a Golden or it's a Basset Hound and they just can't eat that much without being footstools, then they have to have a vitamin mineral supplement. So make sure she's on ProBalance, that she's getting her grizzly, getting her salmon oil. Yeah. And I don't know what the scientific term is, but what tendency in labs and Goldens is called being an easy keeper.
Yes.
And they were bred to be easy keepers because they were owned by gamekeepers, and gamekeepers were not going to put more food into a dog than a dog could go and get working wise. And so they bred these dogs to need very little food relative to, say, you know, you look at a German Shorthair Pointer or Border Collie or an Aussie, same weight, completely different food requirement. And which is the biggest challenge with Goldens and Labs. And there aren't a lot of other breeds like that. They're really the keys. There are some horses that are like the breed, horse breeds that are like that too, that are just known to, thoroughbreds are not like that. No. Thoroughbreds are the opposite. They're hard keepers.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had horses, so I do understand what you're saying. Okay. Yeah. Followed the directions on the bag. I think she'd have to have something like, God, Lord, 4 to 8 cups a day or something.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That, I mean, the bags are crazy. So make sure she's getting that supplement. Right.
One other question, and then I promise I'm done. The pup, my puppy, Zoe, remember the bumps or the.
Yeah. What did she have?
Okay. So the vet said, it's not strangles. He said,
well, good.
He said, two, he said, all breeders say that the other puppies caused the bumps on the nose by biting their heads. I started laughing. I said, well, you know what? I could kind of believe it with this. And he seems to think that if it's probably from, he wanted to know if I knew if the breeder had fed the puppies in all together in one plastic bowl or something. And he says, if that happens, what happens is the food gets on their face, it gets all this bacteria and stuff like that. And he says, it's kind of like canine acne. He said,
so it's like pyoderma.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah.
He says, nothing to worry about. He said, make sure you don't feed her with a bunch of other dogs. I said, I don't do that when they're puppies, so I won't do it with her. And he just said, basically, just do nothing and it'll go away. So,
and is it going away?
Well, yeah, it's nothing like, there's no pustula or any, there's nothing like, gee whiz, this is infected. It's just missing hair at this point. So it's like a little, I don't want to say
spot,
scar, but it used to be like a pimple, but now it's not. So yeah, it's going away. Oh, and he said to make sure, which I had to kind of smile at because I've trained him so well. He said, now, are you making sure that your puppy gets probiotics, vitamin, and don't forget your fish oil? And I said, now, you know, I'm still following Avadog. And he says, well, that's good because that sure works in your puppy. So,
well, good. I hope it clears up. That's great.
Yeah, no,
it's an unusual thing to have happen from that, but hopefully that's what it is.
Well, whatever. That was one of his theories. So who knows whether or not. I just was happy to find out it wasn't strangles and it doesn't seem to be causing any problems. And
good.
He said it good. Was an odd place for, even for acne, he said it was in an odd place for that.
It is. It really is. Yeah, it's very rare there. But hey, none of them read the book.
Yeah. And I also want to say, I'm kind of get chatty tonight. I haven't had anybody to talk to. vets and this scheduled C-sections. Oh my God. I am so lucky, you know, because my vet has always told me, he said, we're going to try to do everything possible not to have that, you know, and I think that's really great. Now he won't, if it's an emergency, then it's a different story. You know, if the puppies are in distress and stuff, but he doesn't believe in scheduled C-sections. And he does them on those dogs that have too big a heads to fit through the
sure. French bulldogs and bulldogs. That makes a lot of sense. You know, it's interesting how human birthing became a medical issue. It went from being sort of a human procreation issue to a medical issue. And for years, I said it was so good that that hadn't happened to canine reproduction. And now we're seeing that same tendency. I mean, I think Brazil is like 50% or more scheduled C-sections. And we're I think, at 30% or 33%. And it looks like in dogs, we're moving that direction. And now we're seeing the repercussions for children. that are born via C-section. And so, you know, there's probably good chance we're going to end up seeing repercussions in puppies. And, you know, what are some of the repercussions? Allergies. And what's on the rise in dogs? Allergies. And so anyway, I know that many of you do C-sections, so I'm not going to, that's a philosophical debate, but I'm a great believer that we need to let our bitches whelp if we can. Tracy wants to leap in, I can tell.
Well, it's really tragic because those scheduled C-sections, our mortality for moms, human moms, is pretty high, and they're bleeding out. So the way that different places have done is, in ICU, we have a crash cart with just all the stuff when your heart stops, all that good stuff. They have all this rapid transfusion on their crash carts on OB because when they bleed, it's hard to come back from. It's really bad. So anyway, it's really tragic, and where we've come to that high percentage means also a high percentage of losing a mama.
That's my, you know, I don't want to terrify people because I want you to do C-sections when you need to do C-sections. But C-sections kill bitches. Natural whelpings might kill puppies, but they don't kill bitches. But C-sections kill bitches. Do they kill a lot of them? No. But is it enough that we should be paying attention to it? Yes. Is it enough that we should be demanding somebody start capturing that data? Yeah, we should. Because so many people casually go into it. And if you aren't on the Facebook page for orphaned puppies, you should go on that. Because that's the requests that go out to find mothers for puppies who have lost their mothers. That gives you an idea of how many bitches are dying from C-sections. So just we've only had a few in Abadog, but they're just tragic.
We had that problem with Posey for the spay of eating and stuff. Hang on, I gotta take off this silly earphones. That Dr. Cindy's. Dr. Cindy didn't do it, her one of her other associates, but she called me after and she was bleeding from the pedicle. So what was left of the stump after you remove the ovary.
And hard to stop that.
What she said was they used something, I don't remember what it was, but essentially like a quick stop on it, plus they applied pressure and put her on her side for pressure. And the gals, the techs told me the next day, said, yeah, we were really stressed. The doctor didn't say that. She said, I want you to know exactly where it was in case you have to go to the ER. But, you know, so here we were. We were 3 months past her C-section, no more than 3 months, almost four, because November 5th, something, you know, so plenty of good time. And we've never had a problem with posing with the two medically necessary C-sections, but there you go. I mean,
yeah, this is probably TMI, but I almost died from a hysterectomy from a spay. Because of bleeding out and barely made it. So those surgeries, we just can't take them casually. We really mm-hmm. have to pay attention to them. Okay, I'm going to move on because this is Cyber Glum. Adrian, I think Adrian's next. Didn't get a chance to submit my question, putting it here. We did a TCI today that noticed gray spots during the scoping and said there's possible sign of early infection and put her on Clavicillin. Just wondering if anybody has any thoughts as to why infection, how much I should be worried. We've had two litters of three with this bitch. I was really hoping for a larger litter. Doing another TCI tomorrow. So Adrian, can you talk to us?
Hi.
Hey, how are you? Yeah. Yeah. Congratulations on the TCI. So the vet had to have seen those gray spots either on the cervix or in the vagina, but not in the uterus.
No, on the cervix.
On the cervix. That's interesting. I'm not sure I can really comment or advise on that, because if it's pio, you're not going to see it on the cervix, I don't think. Although we simply may not have done enough TCIs to know. I'm glad she's on antibiotics, but a cervical infection, I don't know. Anybody else? Renee, are you on? Tracy? Anybody have any thoughts on that? Mary, is Mary on? Any of our experts? Sylvia, were you waving or just
scratching? Yeah, well, I mean, I'm obviously not an expert, but did you culture to find out?
That's a really good idea, Sylvia.
Because remember after my two small litters and we cultured and found that bacteria and there's no telling what it looked like on the inside because we weren't doing TCIs, but just a thought.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, Adrian. If your vet's going in again tomorrow, just get a culture of that.
Okay. We did a surgical last time.
Yeah.
They saw nothing that looked, notable. So
mine wasn't caught on surgical. I had two surgicals that did not catch it in my girl.
Oh. Okay. Well, I'll ask then if they can do a culture.
Yeah, if they could do it while they're up there, because they're going to be looking at it. So either a biopsy and or a culture would seem to make sense if they can do it with their scope.
Okay, thank you.
If possible. Yeah, let us know.
Will do. Thank you.
Good luck. Fingers crossed. Teresa and Lynn asked about Dr. Wachschlag's webinar. It is pre-recorded. It was held last week. You have to call to order it. You can only order the coming ones on the website. So I just put the phone number in the chat. It's at Coccapelli Vet Clinic or Coccapelli Reproductive Services. And so you can call and it's $25. You can order it. Marilyn, question about silent heat. Oh, what fun.
So I was at a dog show this past weekend, and Misty was, when we were moving and she was walking, up and her tail was up and everything looked great, good drive. And then when she stopped, everything drooped. So the judge asked me if she was coming into heat. And I said, I'm expecting it any time now. I'm not quite sure, based on this past heat cycle, precisely when that's going to happen. But May, June, and July are my windows. And she said, I think she's going to be coming into heat very shortly. She said, it might be a silent heat. And I just, at that point, you're in the ring and you're going,
oh, yes, ma'am. I'm sure that's what it is. Because she's always up the rest of the time. That's what I always say. Is she out of coat? Oh, yes, she's completely out of coat.
No, I mean, she's mopey. She came home, my mail was all over her.
Ah, well, that's the key.
Savvy judge. But now my curiosity is silent heat. What is it? What's it look like? And what does it do?
A silent heat is a heat where there are no external signs. The heat is normal. They go through the same cycle. They can absolutely get pregnant, but the vulva doesn't swell and they don't have any discharge. Why? Who knows? I actually was just putting together a talk on silent heats and split heats. We just don't know, All we really know is what's normal in dogs. We don't know much about what causes the abnormal ones. Your boy is the key to this. You can wipe her. You can use a swab and put it into her vulva or wipe her with tissue, make sure the tissue's getting into her vulva and see if there's any.
And it didn't have any blood on it. I'm wondering, can I do cytology? Will the cytology still be the same without the discharge? So I can actually go do a cytology.
You can. You won't see any red blood cells.
Right.
Obviously. But that's not key for us. You know, we're looking at the lining of the vaginal, we're looking at the vaginal cells. So yeah, you can do cytology, you can do progesterone. If she's above 0.2 nanograms per ml, she's in season. If she, if you're seeing some intermediate cells or more, then she's in season. So, but
my last breeding for her. So
you don't want to miss this one.
No, I do not.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there's never a harm in running a progesterone. Cytology, the only harm that can happen with cytology is it's really uncomfortable for her because she's not in season. So if you go to try the cytology and she's like, no, stop, this really hurts, then don't press on.
Okay. Yeah. I'll probably go in and get a progesterone just for a baseline.
Absolutely. There's no harm in it. But Marilyn, also make sure that you are watching for a UTI or vaginitis, because those also can cause boys to go nuts, and all it is an infection.
Yeah, that's just what I need after a pyo.
I know. I'm sorry. It's okay. It's a silent heat, or she's coming in tomorrow. How's that?
Absolutely.
We're just putting that out there. She's coming in tomorrow. Okay, let us know.
Okay.
Renee made the comment for the scheduled C-section, Tracy, to if you make the appointment for day 64, then you will have alerted your doctor that it's coming. And so they might be able to provide better support. Starlet says, I have two girls due 5 days apart, May 31st to June 5th. Huge food. You're going to have to translate that. Will not eat kibble, will eat scrambled eggs, sometimes apples. So she's due May 31st. So she's still got, she's in early in the third trimester.
They're having a huge food aversion. They will not eat unless I scramble eggs, or they will eat raw hamburger. That's it. Or sometimes apples.
And they won't eat cooked hamburger?
They will eat the raw, but they won't eat. I haven't tried cooked, I guess.
So the only reason I'd say to cook it is that you can get more stuff in it when it's cooked. Because it tends to, the fat tends to emulsify vitamins and everything else. So if they'll eat the raw hamburger and the egg, then you can do some supplemental calcium. And you kind of do need to do supplemental calcium if they're not getting any other calcium. Do you know if they'll eat the shells of the egg?
Well, the other day I put the shells in the scrambled eggs and they ate it. But if I put the shells, I have some powder I can use that I had dehydrated the eggshells, but they've never been like this. They're counter surfers when they're pregnant. They never counter surf any other time except for when they're pregnant. And they're not doing that at all this time.
It's so frustrating when they won't eat. It's easier when they counter surf.
Yeah.
And did you try a different kibble just in case it's the kibble?
Yeah, I've tried Natural Instinct. I've tried Acana, which they was gobbling down the Acana. And I've tried different flavors of the Acana. I've tried different. They were on Natural Instinct before, or the Instinct before I switched them to Acana. And they loved it. Now, I can sometimes get them to eat it if I put the food in my hand, with the kibble in my hand. Oh, sometimes this they will, is the time and sometimes they won't.
Feed. I know it sounds terrible, but this is the time to hand feed.
Well,
you
I
never
want
to do it. Yeah, exactly. Right. You're kind of stuck at this point. Now, we have a list. I don't know if you've seen it in A to Z, but we have a list of all the suggestions of things people have tried. I'm looking right now to see if I can find the module. I think it's 6, but I'm not positive.
Well, I can look for it. Don't take the time to do it right now. I'll look for it.
Yeah. So go through that and remember that this is the time to rotate. Don't feed the same thing twice. If they eat a cana one meal, don't feed it the next meal. Because if they're starting to get nauseous after eating, then they won't eat a cana. They won't eat. If you do more rotation, or I do what I call the smorgasbord, where I get like a cutting board and I just put a cana, fresh pet, egg, and I let them kind of go through and pick what they want to eat. And often that will get them a little bit further. You can try tuna juice. Fresh pet often will get them to eat, not always, but that's an option. You get that in the refrigerated section. It's not a reproductive food, but it's a balanced maintenance food, so it beats nothing.
Right.
So go through that list and rotate through and see if you can get them to.
Okay.
Can I ask a quick question? As long as you're talking about lack of appetite, I have a question about my dog who as she was going into estrus, I had a really hard time getting her to eat. Is that normal for them to lose appetite during estrus? Because as soon as she came out of estrus and went into diestrus, her appetite, especially her morning appetite, started picking up again. Is that normal?
It can be normal, but it's not a super common thing. And so where do you live? Where do you live, Therese?
Wisconsin.
So the only thing I would watch for is Lyme.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think
that morning inappetence can be a first sign of Lyme disease.
Yeah. Well, she's gone back to, now that she's in diester, she's gone back to being
a pig again.
No, she's never been a pig in the morning. In fact, I'm starting to think maybe she just prefers to be an evening feeder, but it always takes a little bit of coaxing in the morning, but relative to evening. But I was just wondering if during the heat cycle, if there tended to be fluctuations in appetite.
There can be, particularly during estrus. So you're not normally going to see it in proestrus or diestrus, but you can see it in estrus. Thanks. Their brains go elsewhere. For those of you who know Sarah Gaines, looks like they're losing their 16-year-old lab tonight, so you can PM her in Facebook or drop her note in Facebook if you want. She popped off. Question about changing plans from alive to an AI when there's no gasoline available for travel. Yes. So I just have to say that I have been waiting now for 17 months to get ready to the cardiologist in New York. And we are supposed to be leaving early next week. And there is no gasoline. This dog is never going to get a heart clearance. She's going to be 9 before I get her heart clearance. So we were just talking about that tonight. Jennifer, you want to jump on? Barely. I can barely hear you. Oh, there you are.
Microphone.
So. Oh, there you are. Yeah, now I can.
Maybe this will help.
Yeah, we'll have you really close to the camera. So well, can you just do fresh chilled?
I've talked to the stud owner and she's up for it. Never done this before. I know that it will take extreme timing. He just turned 10 yesterday. He still has great motility. I think he's like 90% progressive motility. So wonderful dog. He's about to be 3. So, you know, the timing is good for both dogs, except there ain't no gas nowhere.
I know, it's crazy. Andy made it back from South Carolina today and he said it was nuts. Like most stations had no gas.
Yeah. So
yeah,
I guess how does I've never done this before. How does it just kind of the quick 30-second overview of how does that work? To collect down in North Carolina, ship up to my repro in Louisville, and then
they can ship it directly to you. It's FedEx typically. So it's just, and it comes in a box, doesn't come in that big, huge space-like container that frozen semen does. It comes in a box. and they can ship it to your ReproVet. They can ship it to you. The semen lasts maybe 3 days is a good planning factor. It can last longer than that, but 3 days is a good planning factor. Mm-hmm. And so you want to really breed on the same days you would do naturals. So if you were going to do your naturals on day 3 and 5 after ovulation, then you would do the same thing with your TCIs. So think about the timing being pretty much the same. So you're going to time her. You have to time her a little bit more than a natural, obviously. But it isn't like a frozen. You don't have to be quite so concerned. You can do a regular AI with it. A TCI is going to probably give you better results if you can do a TCI or 2 TCIs. I would recommend 2 if you can. Mm-hmm. So the stud owner is going to collect it on Monday, let's say. The clinic, the stud owner can do the extending and stuff, then the chilling, but usually a clinic does it. Extend it, chill it, give it to FedEx. They overnight it. It arrives the next day. You put it in.
Okay.
It's, you know, the only we just don't know if FedEx is going to be affected by this. but JP4, you know, jet fuel usually isn't quite the same as gas or diesel, but. They have a lot more options than gas stations do, you know, to get away from the pipeline. So hopefully the pipeline will pay their ransom and get back on track quickly.
Are you willing to donate $25 for that?
I don't know what the ransom was, but I'm like, could you just pay it and can we move on? Because it's kind of hard to imagine that you got hacked that badly. But so Fresh Shields, usually not that complicated. You know, FedEx can be iffy, but the semen is much more resilient than frozen semen is. So
that's very reassuring. I didn't know that.
So yeah.
That's really good to know.
Yep. The one thing I'd say is if you're early, if the semen arrives early, just because, you know, you're trying to time it and the stud owners do, you know, got a schedule and stuff like that, put it in her. Even if it's early, because semen is much happier in the bitch than in the box.
Okay. Better in the bitch. Okay. And then total newbie question. If it comes fresh chilled and we have it sent to the house, do I gotta thaw it?
Or do I no, take it. Just, so you can put it in cold. Or your ReproVet can do it, however you're going to do it. But yeah, the bitch will warm it up.
Okay. All right. I'd rather the vet do it because I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. You'll feel better if the vet does it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Timing's everything these days. Sylvia said she was born via C-section. I have terrible allergies. Yeah. Sylvia is still on. You want to ask your APIC question?
Yes, thank you. So did APIC the other day on my current litter. And the little girl whose confirmation pick of the litter, of course, about the week before, so they were 9 weeks old. I do the APET on the tollers at 9 weeks because I find they have a personality shift during that 9th week. So I hold off on the APET, like we talked about before, because they're very spaniel like.
Right.
So I started noticing during all of that all of a sudden she was just a little more timid, a little more, you know, I was starting to see some changes, which kind of surprised me. She was always rough and tumble with the boys, always in the fight, in the mix, pouncing, stalking them, everything. But then when I took them out through the duck wing, she wasn't in the mix fighting for it. She acted like she was scared of it when it would hit the ground and I tried one-on-one with her in the APET. She was very timid. which was, we had done play dates at other locations with other dogs and strange people, and never a problem, never saw a problem in her. Then just a couple of days later, well, and so I threw a frozen pigeon one-on-one with her. She did great. And then we put them on the live pigeon after the APET, a couple of days after the APET, put her on a live pigeon. No problem. She was in the fight with the boys. It flapping its wings in her face wasn't a problem. All of us, she was paying attention to my husband and not afraid of him anymore. All of a sudden, so she seemed to shift back. Could it have been a mini fear period? Could it have been a, she didn't feel good for a week or what? I'm just very, because I was going to put her in a hunting home. Well, then that made me afraid to do that. So I'm just really questioning how to interpret all of that.
Yeah. So, you know, fear periods are usually fear imprint periods, not more fearful periods. Fear tends to be progressive and not go up and down the way fear imprint periods do, you know, rising and falling, coming and going. My guess is that she wasn't feeling that well. That was my first thought when you were describing it, that something was up with her that might have been minor. They, you know, they also just develop, and nobody develops in a straight line. And so it may have just been sort of this odd period where you were doing more testing. And so you might not have noticed it 2 weeks prior to that as much as you did this time. If she's come out of it, I would not worry about it. If you had seen it stay, then I would say that's who she is.
Okay. Because, you know, I'm ready to start picking homes for these puppies, and that completely changes things for her.
So if you go one-on-one with her and the pigeon now, what's she doing?
She's fine with the live pigeon. She never had a problem with it, but we did that just day before yesterday, a couple days ago after the APET. One-on-one with the frozen pigeon, she was fine with it, but the day I did the duck wing, she wouldn't have anything to do with anything. And then during the APET, she didn't want to have anything. She even went and curled up under the big stuffed dog. she was pathetic. And it really surprised me.
Approach the duck wing now?
She will now. I was going to take them for another play date on somebody else's house tomorrow. And there will be people there that she had brief exposure to, but not really much. I mean, they rubbed her belly briefly. So I thought of having them maybe try to do some things with her one-on-one and see if in a strange area. And
good idea. Yeah.
See if it looks different.
Yeah. So I don't think we can give you an exact answer, but a couple of things to consider. That she may be sort of a slow starter away from the litter, away from her litter mates, that she's not going to be brilliant the first time she does something, but she's latent. And so the second or the third time, she's great with the whole thing. And so that changes sort of who you put her with, who's going to be patient with that. And it changes the guidance you're going to give them. And I always find, I don't know if tollers are latent, but there's an actual large number of golden retrievers who are latent. And latent learners means they don't learn in a session. They learn after a training session when they have the opportunity to process it. So typically with latent learners, your best bet is to train. Whatever happens in the session, and crate. And during the crating period is when they process what happened during the training session. The biggest challenge for many people with latent learners is frustration during the training session, that nothing's happening, that the dog just seems dense and can't get it. And then the next time the dog walks out, they've got it. So play with that idea and see if you think that during an introduction, you're just not going to see much from her. It's going to be after the introduction or the next introduction that you will see what she really has potential wise.
Okay. Would you be afraid to put a dog like that in a hunting home?
Depends upon the trainer. I produce a lot of latent learners and I just coach the owners and tell them what to expect, but they have to be people who are patient with that and aren't going to be frustrated during a session. So you have to kind of look at the owner and say, is this a person that wants immediate reinforcement and needs that dog that even if they need 20 sessions to figure something out, the owner will be happier because the dog makes some progress during the session, as opposed to a dog that only needs 2 sessions, but the first session is ghastly and the second one is great.
Okay. Yeah, I have not worked with any tollers like that, but I will definitely try that with her and see if that's what's going on. But I just kind of had a feeling all along that she just didn't feel good and wonder if
that absolutely can completely change the test. You know, it's an issue with the test that you can't evaluate a puppy that doesn't feel well, but isn't showing you any signs.
Yeah.
So I think tomorrow is a really good idea to use those strangers in a strange place to just get an idea of how she approaches things, sort of do that first part of the test again.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Therese talked about a friend whose bitch died after a scheduled C-section. Yeah. It's heartbreaking. And as Jen says, yes, they are cheaper. It's cheaper to do a scheduled C-section than an emergency, but it sort of depends upon whether you want to roll the dice. You have 100% chance of paying that bill if you have a scheduled C-section, and you probably have a 10% chance if you do an emergency C-section. So if you do the math, it actually ends up most likely, unless you're sure you're going to have a C-section, it ends up cheaper to do the emergency. But it's riskier. You know, I don't want to take away the risks. There are definitely risks. Crystal says C-sections are something I learned not to do unless necessary from Myra Savant Harris. I don't agree with her on everything, but I'm grateful what she teaches on C-sections. I agree. I always think of it as choosing my bitch over puppies. That's how I see it as well. Adrian said a VBAC in dogs is not comparable to a VBAC in humans. That is correct. Dogs don't have any problem with vaginal or natural births after C-sections, unless something happened in the C-section. You know, you had a uterus that ruptured or something like that. Therese, you want to jump on and ask your question about vaginitis?
Yes. I had a bitch that came into season at least a month earlier than we expected because of her, you know, we tracked it over the last couple of years. And it just may be a coincidence, but I'm just kind of wondering if either hormonal changes as they come into heat can predispose them to vaginitis, or the other way around, that maybe vaginitis triggered an early heat. Also, you know, she was in the home of someone who had a bitch in heat. How long would she have to be around another bitch in heat for that to trigger something? My understanding is usually it would take a lot longer for that to trigger, but I'm just kind of curious connection between vaginitis and heat cycles.
So heat cycles in bitches are immune suppressive because of the high progesterone levels. So progesterone is very high in bitches during their heat cycle, and that can absolutely predispose them to infections, pyometra, all those things.
But she was diagnosed with the with the vaginitis about 2 weeks prior to showing any signs of being in heat. So she still would have been at a pretty low progesterone level.
She would have been actually at a baseline progesterone level.
Right.
So post heat, it makes sense. Preheat, it's probably coincidental.
Okay.
So typically for the, oh, I'm drawing a blank. What's it called? For when bitches come in season together. I'm sure a college professor.
With kind of a dormitory.
The dormitory effect, the kennel effect. Yeah. It usually takes several days, if not longer, for bitches to begin to cycle together. The effect of less than that is very unlikely to influence a bitch to coming in season. But remember that there is actually more variation on individual bitches' cycles over their lifetime than there is across bitches. And we know what the variation of cycles is across bitches. It's massive. So when we think we're able to predict when a bitch is coming in season, it's not hugely predictive, which is, if you use our spreadsheet, you'll see we're looking at mins, max, and averages over time, trying to get a grouping, but that grouping still may be 8 weeks. Range for when they're going to come in. So there's just a huge variation in bitches, particularly as they age, they tend to become more unpredictable.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because we were at a training seminar and there was a handler with a male Labrador who said, there's somebody here with a, you know, a bitch that's coming into season. And we all kind of rolled our eyes. And I assumed it was maybe because of vaginitis. So it was interesting you made that comment before that it could have been the vaginitis that was driving the male dog a little wonkers. But maybe it was also early stages of heat cycle.
Yeah, but when did she come in? Was it right after that? Like days?
About 3 or 4 days.
Right after home.
So
if he wasn't an experienced stud dog, that possibly could have been enough to send him off. The more experienced stud dogs tend to wait until they're well into season before they get excited. But vaginitis and UTIs can send boys off just as if the girl's in estrus.
Good to know.
Crystal says, yeah, my girl Poppy's quite large. No kidding. She's huge. She really is quite big. So she's having 7 puppies, gained 14 pounds. Crystal, when is she due? She's coming up, isn't she?
Hey,
how are you?
Yeah, she's due on Sunday, so the 16th.
Oh, okay. So 14 pounds is good. Yeah, she's right at a good size, but she does look big.
Yeah.
It may be the way she's carrying them too. You know,
yeah.
We always have to remember that. And how old is she?
She's about to be 3 in June. And her sister, you know, her sister's 10 days behind her.
I know.
And her sister carries them completely differently. Her sister's in better shape. You know, she keeps herself very fit. And so I think she is, like you said, she's carrying them low. And I think it makes her look bigger.
I think so, too. I think those girls with really good core strength, that those puppies are carried much higher and more under the rib cage. And so you don't quite see the pooch that you do when they look like pregnant goats.
yeah so I'm a little concerned about Poppy just because her mother always had dystocia with all 3 litters. She had 5, 5, and 4, and with every one she had a certain number at home. Well, actually the last litter she had 4 and she had them all at the vet's office, and oxytocin luckily got things moving, so she never needed a C-section. But I'm wondering, is there a certain order in which to try, like walks and then calcium? Do you have a recommended order for that?
Yeah,
feel like I need to program it into my brain.
I would. I absolutely would. So calcium, walks, those are 2 easy things to do. You can do them before an hour between puppies. It's a little harder for the first puppy to figure out. But when you see contractions, you can give her calcium. I know there's this thing that, oh my gosh, not till the first puppy's born. If that puppy's on the way, you can give calcium. You are not going to shut down the parathyroid gland. You can walk her if she's either not progressing or you see contractions and you're not seeing a puppy, you can walk her. But then wheelbarrow, I do, and other people. So I feather, wheelbarrow, and woods maneuver. And I kind of don't have an order of those. I kind of do whatever seems, I do probably wheelbarrow first to try and reposition that puppy. To presuming if you're seeing contractions and you're not seeing progress, there's a chance the puppy's not in a good position. And so if you do the wheelbarrow, you have a better chance of repositioning. I find woods just more difficult to do. Not that the bitches particularly like wheelbarrow either. What's everybody else do? Do you have an order on, aside from walks and calcium? No? Just sort of whatever at the moment. Those are the three are going to be your higher level, I really feel like. So, and if you've gone through the stillborn puppy report, which isn't a good title, but it does give us an idea on timing. So it used to be, you know, as we got closer to 2 hours or the hour and a half mark, we would start doing these things. I've moved it way up now because we know that 60 minute mark really is pivotal. And we want to see puppies, if we can, every hour. It sounds like with Poppy, if her mom had dystocia, then you probably want to start earlier rather than later to see if you can avoid that.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like when I've done Sunwell things, like I had a rescue bitch here and she just, I think her hormones, because she had been at a kennel, it had been like a foreclosure, and then she went to a kennel, and then she came to me 4 days before she delivered. And so I think her hormones just weren't there acting the way they should have been. And it was like an all night delivery of just like desperation. And at one point it was just like, okay, let her have the puppy on my futon. And then there was a puppy that was almost delivered while we were walking in the backyard. And then we did finally do the woods maneuver with one. It was the wheelbarrow we did with one. And I think it was just like desperation. Like, okay, let's try this, you know? And I almost feel like I need to have, you know, the steps set in my brain versus like, okay, I'm desperate now. What do I do?
Yeah. So just write them down, put them on your whiteboard if you've got it. Calcium, walk, wheelbarrow. I tend to feather when the bitch is lying down and trying to have the puppy in some way. So she's showing signs. So I would leave that to last and do wheelbarrow, woods maneuver, and feathering.
Awesome, thank you, that helps.
And Crystal, this is Celeste. I just learned that on my last whelping, to give calcium, if you do see the contractions and stuff with the first puppy, which I thought was like a no-no.
Yes, yeah, I've just been reading that recently.
Yeah, and it helped so much. And also, this is just my personal opinion. I don't know if it has anything to back it up, but I'm all real okay if they're out there having contractions outside when I take them on a walk and stuff. It's like, okay, I'm ready with a towel. I'll catch your puppy, and yay, all the afterbirth ends up on the ground. So I was like, all right, let's just do this outside.
We don't have to do laundry.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm kind of along the lines of Celeste, and I we might be nuts, but I don't really care where they have them as long as they're not on my bed and they're not in my shoes.
Yeah.
If they are happier doing it somewhere else. You know, I don't want them under the porch. I don't want them someplace I can't get to. But if they don't want to be in the whelping box, I am not going to fight them to have their babies in the whelping box. I'll put the babies in the whelping box afterwards. You know, there's actually no reason they need to be born in a whelping box. They just need to live in the whelping box once they're here. But wherever she wants to have them that isn't going to destroy your house, your clothes, etc., if I don't want to stress them out. So I'm, yeah, I'm,
if you're outside trying to have a bowel movement, then a puppy comes. I mean, yay, that's a great way to have a puppy.
Catch it, clean it, back
yep.
it.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. I have to climb under a tree to get some puppies for my dad's dog.
Yeah. Sometimes those are not fun. You know, when you. Does anybody remember Deb Celine's bitch in the cave she dug? I don't know if anybody was on then. Oh my gosh.
This, I remember. Oh my God.
That was, I mean, this dog dug a den out the back duck.
Where was the leash? Where was the leash? Number one, get the leash.
Yeah, keep her on leash, Crystal. Good luck. We'll be thinking of you this weekend.
All right, thank you. I did get oral Cal Plus. Is that good?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good.
Yeah, and it seems to be working better. We'll see. But okay. It seems to be.
I'm trying it tonight, so I'll let you know.
Okay, awesome. Good. Let us know.
Good luck.
Barbara, and I know Barbara, you sent a question in. Barbara had a question about P4, which sometimes we use on the Facebook page, and that's only because we get tired of writing. P4 is progesterone.
Progesterone.
Oh, so P4 is the type of test. It's the type of test that we use for progesterone, and it's simply a lab test, sort of like TSH is thyroid stimulating hormone. So P4 is simply the chemical that they're looking for in that test. It's a part.
Yeah, I figured it was something like that, but I have a better question.
Yes. So I saw you had another question, but go ahead.
Do you see my question?
I do. But you can ask it if you want.
Well, either way, I have a female golden who we're getting to ready to breed here pretty soon, or at least I was hoping to. But my breeder friend who had actually purchased my female from, whose name might have been mentioned earlier in this meeting, had told me she's too overweight to breed. She's at 86 pounds, and she's telling me she has to lose 21 pounds. Before she could be bred.
Well, let's get that girl on a diet.
Well, okay, so what suggestions do you have? Like, I know we walk her for 2 or 3 miles every day, and she's only on a cup and a half of food right now. So,
yeah.
How to eat.
Oh, yeah. So this is the easy.
Have you checked her thyroid?
Yeah, we did a whole battery of tests already on everything.
And thyroid was normal?
Yes. Well, yeah, I presume it was. I spent
go through that list and see if it says T4 on it, thyroid T4, because it's a.
I've had her cleared with a bed already. Everything came out normal. She's ready to go, supposedly.
But at 21 pounds overweight, she's going to be less fertile. She's going to have more likelihood of dystocia. She's likely going to have fewer living puppies. So you want to try to do your best to get the weight off right now. So what are you going to do?
I had one puppy last summer, and it was just a singleton. So I don't know what got messed up with that. That's a long story we don't need to talk about. But
if she was overweight then, that could have contributed.
She wasn't. She was like, well,
she's put on 21 pounds.
She was like at 74 pounds when she got pregnant last time, and she finished the pregnancy at 69 pounds.
Oh, wow. So she's put on a lot of weight.
But she's solid. She's not like that.
She's not
tall.
Hey, Barbara, there's just not golden retriever bitches that are solid at 86 pounds. So,
okay.
So just believe.
All right.
Breathe. I know. Okay. So what we want to do is keep her on a performance level food, but find one with fewer calories. And you want to replace at least a half a cup of that food a day with canned pumpkin. And you want So ideally you cut her back to one cup a day, half in the morning, half at night with a supplement. I know. And you're going to give her a cup of pumpkin, half a cup in the morning, half a cup at night. So you're giving her more bulk with less food. Now, half a cup's a really small amount. So I'm going to go back to Crystal's comment. I think you really need to just check with your vet that they tested thyroid, because for her to go from 69 pounds to 86 pounds, unless you guys are feeding her bonbons every day, that's a huge weight gain.
She has a carrot at night.
She has a carrot. I don't think that's going to be what's causing. And a cup and a half, she's not getting treats. She's not getting pig's ears.
Once in a while, she might get a pig's ear or a hoof.
Yeah. So, she's put on 20% of her weight, 30%. So that would be like a 150-pound person putting on 50 pounds. It's a huge amount of weight gain. So I would just
several miles every day. It's kind of
talk to your vet. That's what makes us think that it's a hormonal issue, that it's thyroid, that it isn't because she's being fed too much or she's not being exercised, that there's something else going on. And thyroid's really common in Golden. So just call your vet and check to make sure they ran that test.
I'm pretty sure they did, but I can
just double check it, because you're going to cut her way back on food.
I know.
In order to keep her healthy. And yeah, I know it's really hard. So I don't know what the calories are in Purina Pro Plan, but are you on the Facebook? You're on the Facebook page. Yes. Yeah. So why don't we have that conversation to find a lower calorie performance food for you? So you go to like 380 calories a cup rather than whatever, I don't know what Purina is, if it's 400, but that in itself will enable you to feed her a little bit more. She's just going to get fewer calories, but you've got to do the swap, either a third of her food with pumpkin or a third of her food with canned food, because canned food has a ton of water in it. So you've got to make a swap between the kibble and another lower calorie item. But your breeder mentor friend is right that at 86 pounds, it's risky for her to be bred. It's risky for her puppies. It's risky for her. So you want to tackle this right away.
Yes, because I said all these people who are waiting for their puppies.
Yeah. So, go to work on it tomorrow and get some pumpkin, get some canned food. You can get cheap canned food right now, but then you want to get good quality canned food. I don't want you to leave her on a cruddy canned food just because you can get it easily. You can go to Chewy's, get a good quality canned food, and just replace that half a cup with canned food, and you're going to cut her calories. Because all we're trying to do is get her calories down. Okay.
Half a cup of kibble with half a cup of pumpkin twice a day.
Yep. And you can go to more pumpkin. You can go up in the pumpkin. Just don't go up in the kibble.
And the exercise should just
keep going. Keep going.
Okay.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
What about raw, doing pre-made raw?
Yeah.
Benefit and not the carbs.
There are some dogs, Barbara, that just gain weight on carbs, just like people. And there's a lot of carbs in any kibble. By definition, to be kibbled, there has to be a lot of carbs. And so a raw food diet or a cooked food diet can certainly cut down on those carbs immensely, but you have to. So why don't we have that conversation on the Facebook page and just look at what your alternatives in lower calorie foods are, but don't go to a weight control food. So we're going to cut the calories while still keeping her on a top quality performance food. Okay. You can do this. It's good for her. Lynn says, if the one female I'm breeding had a silent heat last time, will she have a silent heat this time? Not likely. Typically when bitches have silent heats, they just sort of intersperse them throughout their lives if they do it, and they go back to cycling normally. So chances are you won't see another one. If you do see another silent heat, she needs to get checked out because it can be an ovarian problem. Sarah says, females do May 24th to 26th, not going to x-ray, but is there any point in doing a second ultrasound before whelping? So Sarah, you won't be able to get a very good count off of that ultrasound, but you can check heartbeats. So certainly you can check the health of the puppies if you're concerned about it. But typically, unless, now if you've got a really good ultrasonographer, vet or vet tech, they can give you a reasonable count, but Dopplers tend to give you better counts than ultrasounds do at that stage, just because of the way the uterus doubles up.
So I guess this is my very first litter ever, my female's first litter. And I had to find a different vet than I normally use because of COVID. And so I just don't know what to expect. And so I was like, am I going to, I don't know. I don't have a Doppler. I know I can rent one. I just wasn't sure if there was any point in doing an ultrasound, but
typically, I don't know what other people do. They can chime in, but typically we're going to see that you want to do an ultrasound if you think there's a problem, but you really don't need to do and probably aren't going to get a huge amount of benefit from an ultrasound.
Okay.
Without, unless there's some reason that you're thinking something's right, not right. With the first ultrasound, did you get a number?
Yeah. So the vet said she felt confident there was at least six. I just don't know as far, like, I don't know. I'm probably just overthinking things. I'm just like, oh, what if there's a like resorption, or what if, you know,
if there's a resorption, there's a resorption. Now you got five.
Yeah.
You know, there's just
not
much you can do, especially, you know, you're in the third trimester now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, at this point, there's just sort of a process, unless you're seeing discharge, unless you're seeing unusual swelling, there, you know, really, as much as we talk about all the weird things, 90% of the time, things just go smoothly and they have babies.
Okay.
So, but you can certainly, if it's going to give you peace of mind, and I'm a great believer that, you know, going into whelpings, it's nice to have peace of mind. If another ultrasound's going to give you peace of mind, go do another ultrasound. They don't cost that much. And if it's going to take that one worry, you won't see resorptions at this point. That won't be visible. You're sort of past that stage, but you know, the vet will be able to give you an idea of strength of heartbeats and things like that.
Okay.
How much weight has she gained? Do you know?
I don't know. But honestly, she's really, really muscular, and she, she was in very, very good shape before we bred her. In fact, I struggled to like keep weight on her, but she was really, I think, at an ideal weight. And she just seems, earlier when we were talking about like how, you know, females carry their babies, she's very much like it's inside her ribs. Like her ribs look wider, but she just looks very like tight still. So,
yep.
I mean,
yeah. So, you know, you can monitor her weight. That can be really helpful to keep an idea on how things are going as well.
Okay.
You really, you know, those last 2 weeks is when we see the vast majority of the growth in the puppies. They go from like that to that in just a few weeks. It's kind of stunning how much they grow. So this will be the time you begin to see that weight gain.
How much should I be looking for? So she averaged like 38 to 40 ish pounds. I'd say she was like 40 right before breeding.
Remind me what breed she is.
She's a standard poodle. She's kind of on the smaller side for a standard poodle, but
yeah. So those puppies must come at about 14 ounces. Is that about average?
Yeah, that sounds, that's about right.
So, so we expect two times that on the weight gain per puppy. So if we, what did you say? There were six?
Yeah.
So times six divided by 16. So you'd expect about an 11-pound weight gain.
Okay.
Now that, you know, not now, a little bit closer to the whelping, but so, you know, now you should definitely see 5 pounds up. So check her out.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like everything's on track, even though it's nerve-wracking. Okay. I know it's tremendously nerve-wracking. It's nerve-wracking even if you've done it 100 times. Just, I don't know if that's helpful or not.
No, it is. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Fatina has a dissolvable suture that's not dissolving and it's erupted a few times. Is she bred? Where are you in the cycle, Fatina?
Oh, hi. I'm Kaylee.
Hey. Yeah.
Hey. So this is kind of a very strange happening. So she would have been day 21 or should be day 21 on Saturday. And Saturday is when I noticed that where the incision was from her section in November was looking irritated and a little pussy. So if we backtrack to that pregnancy, that was the girl that I had bred that had carried 4 puppies to term. 3 of them didn't revive the section. What I didn't talk about, because I don't know, it was just, you know, what can you do going back in history? She'd had black tarry, or maybe we did in another call, black tarry diarrhea 5 days before, and then had the diarrhea on the table. So clearly there was some kind of infection going on there. And when her puppy was 6 weeks old and about the time the suture should dissolve, it actually started to, her incision got infected and pussy and irritated. And my vet put her on Clavamox for a few days and then did a surgery, like a small surgery to remove the suture. Right. So that was all from the dermal layers, not from the uterus. Right. So she didn't cut down that deep. So I have no idea, and clearly, you know, I'm imagining the worst here. No idea what's happening deeper inside. So here, you know, we had the surgery in January. Everything's looking good. Discussions with my vet. She's like, you know, do I breed her again? What was this? We had her on a round of good antibiotics in January. Shouldn't, you know, if there was any underlying infection, should be gone. So if she's like, if you're going to breed her again, she's like, you should probably do it sooner than later. Right. So I'm like, yeah, that kind of makes sense to me. So, she came in a season not long ago, bred her. And now where that incision is, it's, so it didn't look too bad on Saturday. It didn't look too bad yesterday. Today, the margins of it look irritated. So I'm going to the vet tomorrow, but I'm like, you know, do I ask them to ultrasound her? It's still kind of too early. You know, check the uterus for something. I don't know if they, what they can see. Do we put her on antibiotics or do I just kind of wait and see what happens with this? Cause it looks a little angry today.
And have you done any compresses or anything?
Yes. So I have the orange medical soap. So I've been washing her once a day with the orange medical soap and doing compresses 3 times a day.
Yeah, I mean, I'm weird. Not a vet. Weird, but I've had a bitch that just struggled with sutures.
And yeah.
Those dissolvable sutures and she did not get along. But this is just a guess. I think I'd be looking for an ultrasound, maybe not of the uterus, although, you know, as long as they're there, let's look for puppies, but to see if they can see what might be going on.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be able to, but you don't want them doing surgery.
No.
I probably would do antibiotics because sort of the last thing you need right now is an infection in the midst of this.
Well, and she
you don't know one. Where the infection is. Right. Exactly.
Right. And she had one. And then this is my healthiest, soundest girl. She's, you know, 2 breedings, have had 4 puppies each time. And the first breeding, there was flux in her and in the amniotic fluid of the puppies. And it was just kind of weird. And one of the puppies didn't revive. So I'm like, what's going on here? Is there some kind of, and I haven't cultured her because we like, you know, like when one puppy dies, you're like, oh, that's, you know, not too unusual. And she was also on day 65. So the placentas were looking pretty mushy. So you just assume that's it. Like, this is just weird. Like, I, odd.
Yeah. 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 It makes you think. So if possible, something that you could ask that might be completely off the wall is to have them culture any pus in it.
Okay.
Just to see, you know, maybe there's just been this percolating infection that the antibiotic hasn't been a great match for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, start on Amoxy or something and then see what the culture says.
Okay. Yeah, it's just odd. Like, in, I don't know what's, my vet is very hesitant to give antibiotics when a girl is pregnant, and I'm not really keen on it. But also, you know, if she did take, I don't want to have another, what I just had in November. And then I don't want her struggling with an infection, even if she didn't.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a big let's jump to antibiotics right away person, but it's not like this is a new minor issue. It may be a new minor issue, but it sure doesn't sound like it.
No, it's kind of, you know, when you look back at the history, it's just kind of weird. And it's sort of showing something. I don't know why.
Yeah. What's in there and what's it been doing? But it doesn't sound like it's been healing completely.
No. And she's like, you wouldn't know anything that's wrong, right? This girl is so resilient and bananas. Like, you know, like...
Which is great, but it would be nice if they would hint to us sometimes that maybe there's a problem we should look at.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So
let us know. So, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just so weird. So weird. And that, you know, I know with her, and then I wonder with her daughter, because I have a daughter, do I not use dissolvable sutures in either of them?
Well, I didn't have that passed on at all. Just in my one experience, I had a bitch that had a terrible, horrendous reaction to dissolvable sutures. And I've bred three generations down with
nobody
else. Yeah. Yeah. It, you know, it may just be that individual sensitivity, but I don't know if it happens in lines. It did not with me.
Okay. With just something weird to give me, you know, one more challenge, like you need them.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, thank you, Gail.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, guys. Well, I've as always kept you too long and have not answered all the questions. So I will try to move them to the Facebook page if possible. But great to see everybody tonight. Let me do my quick review. So tomorrow, if you are a good dog breeder, I apologize to our Canadian breeders that we can't yet get you on. I'm doing the Facebook Live on the Good Dog Breeder Facebook page on Play Areas. I'm going to post that Facebook Live tomorrow here. And then on Monday, I'll post this. You'll get an email, but the next APIT webinar on focus traits is Monday at 1 p.m. And then tomorrow night on Cocopelli, this is a $25 webinar put on by Dr. Bruce Christensen, is Dr. Stuart Mason. Stuart is an Australian repro vet that has done some kind of cutting edge things over the years, such as he just presented, I think, at last year's Therio, maybe Renee can confirm that about oral calcium during whelping and making vets more comfortable with oral calcium, not post whelping. And he is the one that did the intranasal oxytocin, and he's talking tomorrow on TCIs versus vaginal versus surgical insemination. So I have never heard him speak, but I'm really looking forward to hearing him. So that's another $25 one through Cocopelli, but if you want to sign up, I would recommend that. Great to see you all. Renee, thank you for sharing your babies. I've been watching them all night. They look great. I can't believe how little your whelping box is. It's just stunning. Wonderful to talk to everybody. Thank you for sharing your experiences and your dogs. And I will see you guys on Facebook, if not tomorrow night. Bye, everybody.